This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast at NetApp Insight this week. I'm with Santosh Rao. Hi, Santosh. How are you?
Hey, Chris. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great. So why don't you just give everybody an idea of what you do within the company, and then we can get talking about some interesting, some interesting topics.
Sure. So I'm a senior technical director with NetApp, and I lead the AI and data engineering efforts for NetApp, focused around all things data science and GPU-accelerated workloads, working closely with partners like NVIDIA and other data ecosystem partners. I've been with NetApp for over 10 years. I was the founding architect for Clustered ONTAP SAN and led that effort from the ground up from 2008 till about 2015, and led many of the features for SAN, including all VMware and all Hyper-V features, all of our data protection features for SAN, and then our foreign LUN import, which is the SAN data migration. That has now migrated over 300 petabytes of data for 250 customers. So
if we cut you in half like a stick of rock, you'd have ONTAP written all the way through.
Yes, I've got ONTAP all the way through, and much of SAN, and led NAS for a little while as well.
So now you're focusing on the AI side of the business, and this is an area where we've seen a lot of vendors talk about this in the last, say, 6 months to 12 months. So far, I've not seen a huge amount about NetApp and what they're doing in this area. So I'd be really interested for you to sort of take us through and help us understand what the company is actually doing.
So NetApp is focused on a strategy around edge to core to cloud data pipelines for AI. We're seeing that many of these AI projects require enormous amounts of data, anywhere from petabyte to tens to hundreds of petabytes of data. And we're building out these data pipelines that allow for efficient, bottleneck-free data movement, or where possible, avoidance of data movement. We are integrating machine learning ecosystems with deep learning ecosystems, and NetApp views ourselves as bridging the CPU and the GPU universe. What I mean by that is, if you look at traditional machine learning and big data, that is a CPU ecosystem built on the Apache stack and taking advantage of traditional Hadoop and Spark clusters. Now, if you're looking at deep learning, it is a GPU-accelerated ecosystem built on new emerging vendors for the deep learning world, such as NVIDIA, and taking advantage of the new frameworks such as TensorFlow and Caffe and so on. Now, these are two different ecosystems. But when you look at what customers want to achieve, they want to achieve data science that is a spectrum across machine learning and deep learning. And so NetApp views ourselves in this universe as being the data pipeline.
Okay.
And the data pipeline bridges across these ecosystems to give us a seamless edge to core to cloud experience for data.
Okay, so let's talk about what edge to core to cloud actually means. I've been out on the floor already today and seen some pretty interesting ruggedized boxes, which one of which looks like the entire case is a heatsink, a passive heatsink, which is, it looked amazing. I guess as an edge device, those are the sort of devices you're building. Are you building them yourselves, or are you partnering with people? Where are those devices coming from?
So what we've found is that the edge device is a different requirement depending on the vertical that you're in. If you're dealing with healthcare versus automotive versus oil and gas versus financials, each of those is a different requirement. So rather than build that ourselves and cover the whole spectrum of requirements, we have an open partner program for the hardware, and we're focused on bringing ONTAP Select, which is our white box version of ONTAP, along with Linux on KVM into these small form factor edge appliances. So we're working with partners like Vector Data, Packstar, and several others. These partners will build custom-to-order appliances, and they come in various form factors. It could be in rugged, non-rugged, or simple non-rugged form factors. Okay. It ranges in price from $5K all the way to $25 or $30K, giving you the ability to capture anywhere from a few terabytes all the way to about 80 terabytes of data. And this appliance can then run Snap Mirror to give you efficient data movement, which is network deduped and storage deduped, and is only going to move incremental data blocks from the edge to the core. So an example of that would be an oil rig, or as you look at these connected cars, particularly the path planning cars, or you're looking at all of the public sector use cases around the defense projects and frontline projects and drones and things like that, we're getting deployed a number of interesting use cases to move data from the edge. So that's what we're up to.
Okay, so looking at those devices, one of the things that strikes me of the ones that we could see there, they didn't seem to have any sensors or anything on them. So would they then plug into a wider ecosystem of sensors or other types of devices that are collecting that data? And is that then all unstructured data that they're creating on that box?
Yes. For the most part, what we're finding is the ecosystem that generates the data is outside of this box. The box is aggregating data and then allowing for efficient destage of data. So we're not trying to integrate the actual edge sensor devices into the box itself.
Right, okay.
But this is more of a data destage that allows you to achieve a couple of things. One is it allows you to maintain data in safe and rugged containers, because as the amount of data increases, you don't want to have it in loose drives that are having to be taken off the chassis for the purpose of destage. So, for example, with path planning cars and automotive, the time to destage is a critical bottleneck for them. So if you can have a contraption like this that is both rugged and detachable, then you can bring the path planning cars into the garage. You can take a device like this off the car, put another box in, get the cars back on the road. So that's what
okay,
we're focused
right.
on.
So it's a combination, I guess, of them being static in certain locations, but actually still being relatively mobile to be able to be picked out and processed and put back in again. Now, we talked to somebody actually probably 12 months ago who's talking about that for the airlines, where on an aeroplane you'd have a device that has a load of data. One of the things that he was saying, though, was that some of it could be pre-processed on that device. So before you start moving that data in, and we'll come to the pipeline at some point, is there any capability at this point to be able to do anything on the device itself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can, for instance, Snowball, you can run Lambda or you can run VMs mm-hmm. now.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Well, one of the things we're starting to do is test the small form factor Hadoop stacks, and particularly Spark,
okay.
with Apache HDF on these small form factor devices. So we think that edge analytics is a nascent but growing opportunity, and we're starting to test components of the Apache stack on the vector data and pack store boxes with ONTAP Select and with Linux, and looking at what we can do there. Obviously, you can do edge inference for AI, but we think there's also an opportunity for analytics and maybe even a little bit of data filtering so that you minimize the amount of data you send from the edge
right.
back to the
yeah.
core.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess, because worst case, if you've got lots of stuff that you just think we need a summary of this data rather than the whole data, I guess you could still leave the data out there. You don't have to bring it all in or delete it if you've got the capacity, but that's going to be tricky. You're going to run out of space at some point. So I guess you've got to have processes and things that are going to manage that data. How is that being handled? Are there any standards for that yet, or is that currently still perhaps around the management of the OS or the platform you're putting out there?
So we aren't seeing standards for some of the filtering of data and the variety of transformations that you can perform. Obviously, you have a wide range of transformations. For example, based on certain types of data parameters, you may decide if this is data that needs to be processed for analytics or data that just needs to be gathered for a general purpose data lake. You may decide certain parts of the data go to the cloud versus go on premises. And you may even decide which data center you want certain types of data to go to. So we see a variety of interesting intelligent filters that can be applied at the edge going forward. It's a very nascent space. The focus for us at this point is to bring the Apache stack to the edge,
okay.
bring it to small form factor, start there, but we certainly see the opportunity to innovate around intelligent filters at the edge going forward.
Okay, so we said edge, said core, and then we said cloud. So clearly three steps. SnapMirror gets me into a core, and then from that point onwards, are you saying that people would do traditional processing with CPUs and then perhaps still do GPU processing in the core, or is that purely an edge function? Or do you see a bit of both? How would that work?
So what we see is that the data science follows the data, and data follows the application. So if the customer ecosystem and use case is taking advantage of microservice-based applications that are developed in the cloud, then that is going to be an edge-to-cloud data pipeline.
Okay.
Because the application architecture is all in the cloud. Therefore, the ecosystem for data is going to feed into the application framework that is in the cloud, and the data science follows the data, so the entire stack is edge-to-cloud. Now, if you're looking at traditional applications that have had on-premises databases or other forms of BI systems or unstructured data lakes, those are going to be edge-to-core data pipelines, with some amount of cloud, either for archiving core data or having some amount of data protection as a second copy in the cloud and so on. And then if you're looking at hybrid architectures, we are finding some very fascinating examples of usage of hybrid cloud. For example, I'll just give you one fascinating example. You've now got the notion of hedging your bets for innovation. What we mean by that is if you look at the AI investments being made by Amazon and Google and Azure, customers want to ride that innovation wave coming out of the clouds. So there are actually customers building multi-cloud architectures simply to hedge their bets. So if Amazon overtakes Google in their AI innovation, they don't want to be left behind and scrambling. So they're putting three copies of data, one on premises, one in the Amazon cloud, one in the Google cloud. They have three AI stacks, and they're like, you know, may the best cloud win.
Well, that's an amazing scenario to think. I mean, first of all, there's a lot of practical pieces around keeping that data consistent. So you're using the same data in both locations. But there's an implication there that the speed of development of those platforms is so quick that you can't afford to go with one or another, because if you do, your data will be in the wrong place, and then you've had it. You know, you can't physically move it to another platform. That's a really fascinating scenario to see.
Yes. Now, another fascinating use case that we see is particularly in the media and entertainment space. We see different cloud ecosystems as being the foundation for different ecosystems through which customers consume content. So if you're consuming through Amazon, Hulu, or you're consuming through Netflix, or you're consuming through Roku, you know, pick your favorite media source and the ecosystem through which you're consuming content, customers are finding that GDPR regulations minimize what you can do in getting data in and out of that ecosystem.
Yeah.
So they're building tri-cloud architectures, going back to the whole edge to core to cloud concept. They're building hybrid cloud architectures across these potential ecosystems so that when a customer is consuming media content in the Google cloud, they can stay there. All analytics and data science can be done for that customer in that ecosystem in the Google cloud, separate from Amazon, for example. And completely separate from where the Netflix deployment may be. So we're seeing GDPR drive a number of hybrid cloud and multi-cloud architectures where you can provide the complete analytics and data science framework right by the application once again, right by the data set, and right by where the user is consuming content.
Yeah. So you're doing, but from your perspective, you're doing work on-premises and you have your own, shall we call it a reference architecture? Maybe that might not be the right word for it. The ONTAP AI environment, is that reference architecture or is that sold as an actual product?
That is sold as an actual product, but is actually built out in the channel. So it's a little bit of both.
Right.
We like to think of it as a turnkey platform for AI training and inferencing. And I would also add that ONTAP AI is a brand name from NetApp for both a software stack and a hardware offering of that stack. So you can obviously deploy this on the DGX servers with the flash systems from NetApp, but you can deploy the stack as a part of the cloud where you're consuming GPU as a service with the NVIDIA GPU cloud, which is the software framework stack for deep learning, on top of NetApp cloud volumes, and you get the same exact stack except it's cloud-based. So this is
a hybrid deployment. That's interesting, because it would be easy to assume, looking at your stand, that there's a massive rack in front of it with a pile of kit inside that tells you that that's ONTAP AI, but it doesn't make it obvious that there's a cloud version of that on there. But that's really not easy to do, I guess. It's not easy to present the cloud image on a stand very well. It's easy to present product. So are customers using both of those? Are they using a hybrid of that? And why would they choose one over the other than maybe the security of their data? You know, is it down purely to the cost factor, or, you know, what reason would they choose to go one route or another?
Yes, so variety of reasons. If the customer is starting out early in their AI and data science journey, they're going to use the cloud for a quick POC. The data scientist doesn't want to wait for the hardware to show up and for infrastructure to rack and stack hardware and give them access. So they're going to start out by just spinning up an Amazon AMI instance or a Google Cloud virtual machine and just starting out with data science in the cloud. The other reason they want to use data science in the cloud is they've got all the data for a particular use case that's already in the cloud, and they just want to build right next to it and get started in the cloud. So that's a couple of examples. Another example that we see is in the healthcare vertical. With all of the distributed and small medical offices out there, they don't like to put gear in the office itself. So what they try to do is get data off of the medical office into a backend cloud and do all of the healthcare processing out of the cloud. So you get a variety of reasons why people want to use the cloud, but I go back to the basic principle, which is the application architecture drives the choice of where your data lands, and where your data lands then drives where data science is performed.
So what do you think the biggest challenges are in this type of architecture. I mean, the one that stands out for me, it's probably the biggest one, is security, possibly followed by how on earth you maintain and manage all of these edge devices compared to what you do in the core. But what are you seeing as the most challenging part?
The most challenging part that we see is actually the data movement itself. Customers are generating tens of terabytes of data at the edge. They've got hundreds, thousands, and soon tens of thousands of these devices. They can't add network bandwidth fast enough to move data. And then they can't filter data intelligently enough to reduce the amount of data that they're moving. And data movement into a data lake has to then be followed by movement into, as we talked about earlier, a GPU ecosystem.
Yeah.
So you've got these silos that already existed in the form of data lakes by line of business, data lakes by different geos, data lakes that are copied across lines of business so that you have my copy and I have your copy, and it's just completely out of control. When you look at the amount of data generated, the number of copies, and then the cross copies, data sprawl is uncontrollable.
Okay.
Then when you look at the CPU sprawl, you've got 100 node, 200 node CPU clusters. So we think that the two biggest problems customers are dealing with is compute sprawl and data sprawl, and we are focused on reducing both of those by data copy avoidance using ONTAP as an in-place architecture.
Okay.
What ONTAP allows is the consolidation of a variety of data sources on a unified data platform, such as ONTAP, that allows multi-protocol access. So you can do NoSQL, you can do traditional databases, you can do Splunk and Elk, you can do Hadoop, Spark, as well as AI and deep learning, all on ONTAP as a single data source or a single data platform. In so doing, you can avoid the data copies from the data lake into the GPU ecosystem and really bridge across the CPU universe and the GPU universe, feeding data in place out of the platform as opposed to copying petabytes of data over and over again.
I was sitting with Dave Hitz yesterday. We were having a chat, which is always fun because it goes off in lots of different tangents. But we ended up getting the whiteboard out and drawing a few things on the whiteboard. And I think the one thing that stands out for me is that we might have thought of storage as being important. We, you know, when we used to say the network is the computer and then storage seemed to be centric. I think now what we're saying is data is the center part and everything else is peripheral to the data. And when we draw up our architecture diagrams, or at least when we draw up our theoretical diagrams, I think more and more I think we're seeing data being the center of that discussion. And it seems to be that seems to be where we've gone over the last sort of 3 or 4 years as we're creating more and more data. And it's not about the hardware anymore. It's not about the platform anymore. It's about the applications that can process that data.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I like to take the analogy that if you look at the history of these compute ecosystems, the pace of disruption of the compute ecosystems has continually shortened to the point where, you know, I'm an old storage guy, as are you.
Yeah,
sadly. Both of us have been doing storage for 25, 30 plus years.
And I
go back to my analogies of, you know, back to Paddle SCSI and Fibre Channel. You go back all the way, you're going to see lifespans of 5 to 10 years for a particular architecture before you move on to the next architecture.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at the modern third platform universe, you're seeing database architectures change every 2 to 3 or every 3 to 4 years. If you go back about 3 or 4 years, we were talking about Aerospike as an example of a NoSQL database. Then the next generation of MongoDB, Cassandra, and so on have come in. Now we are seeing GPU-accelerated databases. We are seeing databases like Kinetica, Scream, MapD, or OmniSci. And so every 3 to 4 years, the compute ecosystem is shifting. And what that does is you can choose to put your data within that compute ecosystem and get locked up to the lifespan of that ecosystem, or you can decouple your data, have your data in an external, long-lived, portable format such as NFS, and that data can outlive your ecosystem. Now, for customers that choose to do that, data, which is their greatest asset, is actually consumable long beyond the lifespan of the compute ecosystem. So if you have a customer that has 30 years of data, for example, NASA,
yeah,
if you look at space, they've got 30 years of space images that have been captured 12 minutes apart, and they can go off and do anomaly detection in space to look for, you know, what kind of events happened, when did a black hole get created, when did a star emerge, and when did a star implode, and all kinds of things. But to do that, you need to be able to access 30 years of data. And that's where we come in, and we're able to keep data separate from compute and allow for the data to outlive the compute.
Yeah, that's a really interesting philosophical discussion about keeping compute and data separate, because on the one hand, a lot of people in the last few years have said HCI is the solution and we should merge it. But I look at that and think, well, that's not really the sort of data you're talking about. That's more operational data, maybe OLTP data. So I personally still think you should separate storage and compute because it does give you that ability to long live it. I was surprised at the number of different solutions and products you named there that I hadn't heard of. And I think I do try and keep up with stuff all the time. It seems to me that as an end user, you've got a huge amount of work to try and work out which is the right platform to put your data in, which are the right tools to use. That must be really hard for customers to work out what they should and shouldn't do.
It is challenging. When you look at this third platform universe of open ecosystems and the number of frameworks and the number of tools that are coming in, and overlay that with the number of clouds, which all have their own versions of those tool sets, it is a challenge for customers. So this is where hybrid cloud architectures that can give you the framework and stack either on-premises or in the cloud or across multiple clouds is going to become more and more popular. So when you look at what NVIDIA is doing with NGC, which is the platform that is used for deep learning and machine learning on top of GPU-accelerated ecosystems, and that is the software stack that we use on ONTAP AI, that platform and ecosystem is available in all of the clouds as well as on-premises. But I have to agree with you, it is really challenging for customers to work across the enormous number of software ecosystems and components that are being offered up. One of the things that we do on ONTAP AI is the stack is fully containerized. The Docker components are being tested and published by the vendor and are fully supported by the vendor. So we are at least taking away the interop concerns across all of these moving parts in the open source ecosystem by publishing tested, validated versions of these container images.
Okay. And just, I guess, as we wrap up, what can customers or what can end users expect in, say, the next 3 to 5 years? Where is this headed other than becoming incredibly complicated? What can they expect and what should they be really trying to do as part of their strategy going forward?
That's a great question. I'd say that no matter what vertical the customer is in, data science is going to make or break their competitive position within their segment. Those customers that can architect for data and can architect data science and use cases on top of the data are going to take advantage of and survive and thrive. And so it is important to look at data architecture in terms of what types of data you're capturing, whether it's video, image, audio, sensor data. It is important to architect for minimizing the amount of data and the cross-pollination of data across regions. It is important to look for what business problems can you solve in a fundamentally disruptive way as opposed to incremental existing workflows, and then to build back the data science techniques to achieve those business use cases that are disruptive and are keeping up with the disruptors in your space. No matter which vertical you're in, you have a disruptor today. And for the traditional brick and mortar customers, survival requires you to keep up with data science and changes in how business is approached, taking advantage of data science.
Great. Okay, so where can people find you online? Can they stalk you online on Twitter or anything like that?
Yes.
Where can they find more about the solutions on the NetApp website?
Absolutely. NetApp.com/AI is the single landing page for all things AI and data science. So https://www.netapp.com/AI. My Twitter handle is @SantoRao, S-A-N-T-O-R-A-O. And I do a fair bit of blogging for NetApp, and it can be found off the blog pages of NetApp as well.
Wonderful. And I'll put some links on the show notes for this post for that, so people can find you and click through. But thanks very much for your time. Appreciate the conversation.
Thanks, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.